Before you listen to this great episode of Partner with Survivor, we'd just like to tell you about a powerful new practice tool the Safe and Together Institute has launched. Our perpetrator pattern mapping tool has been available for 10 years, but now it's available for the first time in a web-based version. What it does is really help you map perpetrators' patterns of behavior onto child family functioning, talk about its intersections with mental health, substance abuse, and other issues, address intersectionalities, worker safety, all in an easy-to-use online package that protects the confidentiality of your information and lets you wrap it all up in a neat little package, basically, to print it out and to kind of document all those different pieces of information. This is a tool that can be used by both survivors and practitioners. And for the very first time, it's available immediately online without any other prior training.
The training is embedded in this powerful practice tool so that teams that have not been trained in Safe and Together can immediately begin mapping in an effective way.
That's right. It's like having a Safe and Together coach in your back pocket is what I like to say.
There you go.
So we really encourage you to go to our virtual academy, academy.safeandtogetherinstitute.com. Check it out. You know, you can subscribe to it immediately or you can check out a free demo version for 30 days. So please reach out to us and try this new tool. Now enjoy this great episode of Partner with Survivor.
We're back.
Way sooner than you ever expected.
Yes.
And just when you think you know us.
We.
Cha-cha. Ninja.
We do something completely different.
Yeah.
Which they're saying I can't do at least.
I'm not sure that cha-cha and ninja actually go together.
That's right.
I put them together.
That's right. This is our first Minisode. Series.
Minisode.
Okay,
which
thank you.
Which means that we have to do this in about 15 minutes.
That's right.
Make your bets now, people.
That's right. I was challenged by my team that I couldn't do a podcast
and Ruth use less words?
Less words. So here we are. So we are still partnered with a survivor, and I'm David Mandel, Executive Director of the Safe and Together Institute.
Don't have to speak faster.
Okay, sorry. I won't.
That's not how this works.
Okay.
And I'm Ruth Stearns Mandel, and I am the e-learning strategic relationships and communications manager.
And we are joining you from Tunxus Land here
in Connecticut.
So this is a series, which I'm very excited about worker safety and well-being in the context of domestic violence practice, which is been a big issue that's come up, and this is the kickoff episode, and we're going to do about 5 or 6 episodes altogether. At least that's our plan now.
Right.
And as a systems change organization, the well-being and safety of workers is critical for us on so many levels.
Yeah.
And so this is a series that.
But it's, keep going. Sorry.
You know, it's okay. It's a really series of brief discussions about different themes, and we'll go through those themes before we're done. But the goal is to really address this area that has so many implications for organizations and individual practitioners around retention, attrition, around
efficacy, right.
Mental health and well-being of staff.
Safety.
I mean, it really touched on so many different things. So this the audience for this mini-sode.
Thank you.
Series is frontline staff, but also human resources.
Yeah.
Managers
supervisors,
leaders, and agencies.
Policymakers.
That's right. Because we want you to listen to this and think about where is your agency on this continuum of things.
Right.
And it's part of this domestic violence informed systems change that we're trying to cultivate.
Well, if in order for us to create practice change and for workers to hold perpetrators accountable, they have to be prepared for the predictable behaviors of those perpetrators, and supervisors, managers, policymakers, HR people have to create policies which support their workers and recognize when a perpetrator is trying to manipulate the system, bully, harass, stalk into getting what they want and silencing victims. That's very, very important.
Right. And so we really want to name the ways one of the topics will be for one of the Minnesota episodes is how perpetrators, how and what to do when perpetrators actually target you as a professional.
And in these minisodes, we're going to be giving behavioral information,
right,
patterns of common behaviors,
right,
of perpetrators and how they harass and threaten workers into silence, and how systems fail to create that safety, that those policies which are supportive of those workers in that situation.
So the worker safety has been at the center, been a main part of the safety of the model since its inception. You know, when I started first doing consultations in child protection, I became quickly aware that workers couldn't describe perpetrators' patterns of behavior. So I was kind of poking around to find ways to get them to do that because it felt so critical in terms of understanding risk and harm, mm-hmm, telling the story of how the perpetrator harmed the children, expecting behavior change, all these different things that were related to the work with the family. Good, as you said, ethical, efficacious work with the family. And one of the things I tried to hook workers in through was, do you know if this person has any history of being assaultive, threatening, intimidating to people outside the family, including professionals, law enforcement, and almost to a person they didn't know?
Right. Very dangerous people. You must find that information.
And so what I took away from that was that the organization and the institution, mm-hmm, wasn't supporting their workers, mm-hmm, to practice in a way that was consistent with the health and safety and well-being of those workers themselves.
I would say that organizations not assessing that and not having a plan is poor safety planning behavior, is not proper risk assessment behavior, is not understanding the threats and analyzing how those threats impact efficacy of work. So this is really a foundational piece of institutional safety planning that needs to start happening.
Right. And if you really think about this, and we have a white paper on worker safety.
We'll connect to this.
Which is that if you think about law enforcement's take on this issue, is they know that domestic violence calls can be one of their most dangerous calls.
Right.
And these are professionals who show up often armed with a weapon, with mace, are wearing bulletproof vests, or mm-hmm, have, you know, whatever else, you know, training and implement, you know, and so.
But I would like to point out that the most common form of manipulation of systems is not a direct physical threat to workers. That's actually very rare. It's much more rare than it is a professional threat to workers.
Right. Which we will
so please,
that's right.
Please
we're talking
keep
about the,
those two distinct in your minds.
We're going to talk about the range of these things.
And if you do not want to lose your professionals,
right,
you have to come up with a very
right,
specific plan, taking into account how perpetrators behave towards professionals, to be supportive and to investigate those actions.
Right. So we're going to talk about the range of things, from how do you manage physical safety threats and how do you identify them and talk about them, and then emotional threats, manipulation, you know, gaslighting, all those different things that may be part of how a perpetrator approaches the system. You know, one of the things before we list the topics that we're going to talk about so you can know where we're going is that I believe, and it's been supported by the work we've been doing with University of Melbourne and Kathy Humphreys and her team as well, has really kind of jumped out even more to me during this period of time, is that when we don't equip workers to manage their fears or concerns about engaging perpetrators, what they will continuously do is go back to the victim, usually the mother, and hold them accountable.
Right, because it's easy. Because
right,
the survivor, the victim,
right,
is actually not the person who's breaking the law,
right,
and is not the person who's dangerous.
Right.
And the system can coerce them via fear,
right,
into actions which they believe is protective, but ultimately is ignoring the person
That's
who
right,
is criminal.
That's right. And so I see addressing worker safety and well-being in all its different manifestations as being critical to breaking the back of this idea of failure to protect as the way to approach domestic violence in kids.
So we're 8 minutes in.
Oh my God, we're almost done with this mini-sode.
I feel like we're super efficient.
Yes.
This is amazing.
So let me tell you a little bit about the topics that we're going to cover. And we've kind of alluded to them so far. In no particular order, because I'm not committing us to the order that we're actually going to produce these episodes in. Because the way we work is sometimes we look at a topic and go, yes, this today, we're ready. Is one of the things we mentioned is when workers are targeted by the perpetrator of one of their clients.
Very important.
Very important. This is the one that you...
This is specifically important for professional organizations and for HR leaders and supervisors and managers. It is actually quite a gift. The perpetrator's patterns of behaviors are fairly predictable, at least right now, within the context of how systems are working. And so it's a gift that we can create this framework of expected perpetrator behaviors within that professional context and name it and identify it. So that way professionals can create a pathway and a plan for how to resist those manipulations.
So we're not going to dive into it, but if you've ever been targeted for complaints by a perpetrator
to a professional organization,
or to your leadership or threats of those complaints, that's the kind of thing that we're talking
about here.
That's going to be part of it. The next topic is the connection between worker safety and engaging perpetrators in mother blaming practice. And again, I kind of alluded to this already, but the idea of if you don't have staff that don't have the confidence and the skill and the mandate from their leadership to engage perpetrators.
And the scripts.
That's right.
For when that perpetrator starts to threaten or gaslight that professional.
Right.
If you can't hold the reality of focusing on their behaviors and not be drawn into these side arguments or these accusations, you will not be able to focus on that perpetrator.
That's right. And this is a really, I think, a hidden problem to the degree that it will show up as people saying, I can't find him.
Yeah.
Or he wouldn't engage me.
Right.
After no or minimal attempts to do that. So this is a hidden issue that's a big one. The next one is, when workers are being targeted by their own perpetrator through the workplace and at home.
Yes, because even in domestic violence organizations and NGOs that deal with domestic violence, if a person is experiencing violence and stalking and harassment by their own perpetrator, often those entities will fire that survivor as a way to protect themselves against liability rather than create safety plans and address the safety of and well-being of that person who is working for them.
Right.
And this plays directly into a perpetrator's hands of financial abuse and increases their power and control.
And if you can imagine being a survivor who works at a child protection agency and how terrifying the threat might be, I'm going to call your agency and report you for child abuse.
Maltreatment.
That's right.
Which is a very common behavior of perpetrators.
Right. The next topic we'll cover is when workers' own experience of abuse are triggered by their work with families. And this is a little bit different. It overlaps, but many professionals come from families where a parent has been abusive, there's been other forms of abuse, may have had it in relationships. And I can't tell you how many times people have been sent to trainings by employers, and then partway through the training, or you know, they have an epiphany that, oh my God, we're talking about
my life,
or we're talking about my best friend who was murdered. I had somebody come up to me, and so we're hearing in more and more about the triggering, and so that's about that piece, and that's about emotional safety, and then managing your own fears about the safety of the family. And I really want to acknowledge that workers are deeply passionate and committed to the safety of the families they work with. And they're often not supported in walking around with their feelings about fears and concerns in the way that really they need to be in many cases. Mm-hmm. So these are the topics. This is where we're going.
Oh, my goodness.
And I don't know if we're going to finish these in a week or 2 weeks. We don't know yet.
Right.
But stay tuned for this. If you have other topics and ideas, send them to us.
And you are David Mandel.
And I'm David Mandel, Executive Director of the Safety Together Institute.
And I'm Stearns Mandel. And if you would like to get more information on our trainings, including worker safety, please go to academy.safeandtogetherinstitute.com.
And follow us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all the places.
And our website is safe and
togetherinstitute.com.
And we are out.